Thanks for your time tonight, and welcome to the Young Athletes Program. Our topic for this evening is the Part 3 examination restructure. Tonight we've got three speakers lined up for you. First is Philip Latham. He's the Head of Education at the Actuaries Institute. He's responsible for oversight of the education program, as well as managing strategic projects. Our second speaker will be Steve Miles. He's the former president of the Institute and one of the writers of the new structure. And Steve is also the chief examiner for the 2B subject. And our last speaker is Stan Wang. He's an actuarial analyst at Clearview Wealth Management. And she passed her first life insurance exam under the previous structure and her second one under the new structure. So she'll be able to give you some of her experiences. Just some housekeeping. Bathrooms are around the corner to your right. You could please switch your phones off. And also, when we have a Q&A session at the end, because this is being recorded, I'll be running around with the mic, so please, before you ask a question, just wait till I get there with it. So without further ado, take it away, Philip.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Phil Blakeham. Now, I ran this session in Melbourne some time ago, 5th of June it was. I'll remember that because it was actually State of Origin night. This is the problem with people in Melbourne. They don't understand anything about rugby league. So I agreed to do it on that date and then looked in my calendar and thought, oh no, what have I done? This shows my commitment to the Institute and gave a message across to members. Now, they came up with the title of getting dressed for the Part 3 makeover. So I thought I would keep with the makeover theme. So I've used images, makeover images throughout my presentation. You may recognise this image from a popular reality TV show. Does anyone know?
Beauty and the Geek.
Beauty and the Geek is correct. What season?
Three.
It was season 5, which is the most recent series. So, how has the Part 3 assessment structure changed? Okay, so the old assessment structure, if you're not familiar with that, there were two assessments. There was an assignment, which was weighted at 15%, and a 3-hour handwritten 5 or 6 question exam for 85%. The old pass criteria, there were primary and secondary pass criteria. So the primary pass criteria was a scale mark of 60% or more. And the secondary pass criteria were you needed to pass at least half the questions in the exam. You could have no more than one D grade. And you could have no E or X grades in your exam. Does anyone know what an X grade is? X grade is a non-attempted question. There was also a criteria that, irrespective of the other criteria, that you could be failed for having serious misunderstandings in your exam answers. Now, this criteria is used just to initially rank students. Students that are on the fringes of passing classified as borderlines, and there's a judgment made by the chief examiner on those borderlines. So that's the old system. So out of the old and in with the new. The new system, there are what was it about the old system that was perhaps less than optimal? So the multiple pass criteria perhaps overemphasized exam technique during the exam. Students had to think about spreading the time that they spend on each question evenly because of the secondary criteria. Feedback that we've had from student evaluations has also indicated that they believe there's insufficient time in the old exam structure, that 5 or 6 handwritten questions in 3 hours just wasn't adequate. The old system's also very intensive on our education volunteers. Now, you may not realise this, but in a calendar year, we would probably use over 300 fellows that volunteer on the education program. So there are also some inefficiencies with the administration. So, for example, when you're dealing with handwritten answers, we would have to courier exam packages out to centres and have couriers send the exam answers back to us. Now, what the Institute's been doing over the last few years is scanning exam answers, which takes quite a lot of staff time. So they're the things that were less than optimal with the old system. So the new Part 3 assessment structure. There are three assessment components of the new structure. Firstly, there's an online discussion forum participation mark, which is 10%. A 1-hour online multiple choice exam, which is weighted at 30%. A 3-hour longer answer case study component at 60%. Now, there is just one single pass criterion, which is a scaled pass mark of 60% or more. So the secondary criteria have been removed now. However, that other criteria, that irrespective of the one criterion, you can be failed for having serious misunderstandings anywhere in your exam, is still applied. And again, the pass criteria is just to initially rank students. Students that are close to the fringe of pass and fail become borderlines, and they're reviewed by a chief examiner. So, what are the good things about the new
well-addressed student now?
Part 3 assessment structure. This is the post makeover. So, firstly, it uses multiple assessment modes. So people have got different learning styles, different things that they're good at. Having three different assessment components, we're covering different assessment types. So we believe that that's an advantage. We also believe that the discussion forum participation helps students to express their opinions and contest ideas, and that that will actually help you learn. So it forces you to engage with the course materials and understand them. So the assessment weighting is put there as a motivation to provide that outcome. Now, the case studies are designed to simulate reality. So what we're trying to do is take a situation that you might face in the workplace, and you're using typical workplace tools to do that. So you're using Word and Excel that you would normally do in your job. So what we're trying to do is make the new exam that biggest weighted component of the exam more like what you would do in your job in the real world. We also believe that the new pass criteria, the single pass criterion, is actually a simpler and fairer pass criterion. So there's less emphasis on the exam technique now. So marks that you achieve anywhere in the exam all count towards your aggregate. We also aim to ensure that there's adequate time. Now, we're getting feedback from students in evaluations. We're monitoring that. But that's something that we really want to ensure that the new structure does achieve. Now, there are also volunteer efficiencies with this. With multiple choice questions, it takes a lot of effort to write them. But then the plan is that they'll be reused over several semesters. And multiple choice questions don't require any marking. So all the efforts start up front. So the amount of volunteer time has reduced with the new system. Now, one of the things that could come next is putting more institute volunteer time into the teaching and mentoring side. And there are also a number of administrative efficiencies. As you could imagine, with everything digital, the multiple choice results are available the next day, and all the digital exam answers come back via email from exam centres the following day. So we don't have to worry about courier or things going missing. So the online discussion forum participation mark, you need to make two original posts during the semester. And by original posts, it doesn't mean that you have to say something that's never, ever been thought of in the history of the course. An original post just means an initiated post, so the first post on a particular topic. You also need to respond critically to four other students' posts. Now, you get marks awarded for how well you discuss the issues and recommend solutions, and how well your ideas are communicated. So there's those two parameters. Students who don't make the minimum number of posts will be limited to a maximum of 5 out of 10 marks. Now, there's also a requirement that you have to make your posts throughout the semester, not all at the beginning or all at the end. Multiple choice exam. We make sample questions available in the LMS, and the idea is that we'll be adding more sample questions later incrementally. So ideally, we'd like a situation where we have a pool of randomised sample questions, and you could take a full exam with 30 questions, do it several times, and get different questions come up in the pool. That's a long-term goal. It'll take us some time to achieve that. But we think it would be a useful learning activity for students. We're using an online exam system from ANZIS, the Australia and New Zealand Institute of Insurance and Finance. Now, we actually have security built into the browser where you need to keep the browser window active at all times. So if you accidentally open another browser window, the exam supervisor will have to enter a password to allow you to continue the exam. Now, we've trialled this over a couple of semesters, and it's working quite well. There's a one-hour time limit for the multiple choice exam, and you'll get approximately 30 questions. It could vary subject by subject, semester by semester. Multiple choice is closed book. You can bring a calculator with you, however. The questions are either 2, 3, or 4 marks, depending on the level of difficulty of the question. Now, a very important tip here. The questions have either one correct answer, in which case you'll see a radio button. Does everyone know what a radio button looks like? It's a round button. It's physically impossible to select more than one option with a radio button. Or, if there are more than one correct answer, you have check boxes, which are little rectangular boxes. You can potentially check every box with a checkbox question. Now, we won't tell you how many answers are correct, but you will always know whether there's one or more than one correct answers. So if you see a radio box, a checkbox, it means there's more than one. We have actually had students only check one option for those questions. Longer answer case studies. Again, we've got sample answer questions in the LMS, and we'll be aiming to add more. So each semester we'll put previous semester's exam up there. We use Word and Excel. Access to the internet is blocked during this component. You've got 3 hours to complete it. Now, typically, there'll be 2 questions. There are open book conditions for this part of the exam. You're allowed to bring any printed material, so any textbooks and course notes, but you're limited to taking 1 CD or DVD of digital material. In Melbourne, somebody asked, you know, what CD would you recommend? And I said, don't bring a One Direction CD. One CD for the exam. And you can bring a calculator as well. But we expect that most students will do their calculations in Excel. So the time frame for implementation, we've done this for life insurance over 2 semesters. It's coming this semester for GI and investment manager and finance. And then next year, first semester, will be rolled out for global retirement income systems. Again, another image from Beauty and the Geek. This is one of the contestants having their back waxed. Change can be uncomfortable. However, we believe this is a change for the better. We're continually monitoring the new system. And I implore you that when you do a Part 3 subject, please complete the evaluation. We take the evaluation very seriously. In fact, the Education Council Committee are using the results as one of the performance indicators for this new system. So, please do it. This last image is from Beauty and the Geek Australia Season 1. Now, you may not know this, but an actuarial student from Curtin University was in that show. Can you spot him? Oh, I gave a gender-specific pronoun there, is
it? I was giving a student's answer.
So it's the young gentleman in the beige Richie Beno blazer at the front.
Sure.
That's Alan Kwong. And people in Melbourne asked how he did. Unfortunately, he was the first eliminated. And merely because of his partner. He was collateral damage. So thank you. I'll now hand over to Steve, who was one of our new assessment writers and chief examiner in life insurance. Thank you.
I obviously don't watch enough reality TV. I have heard of that show, but I've never ever watched it. Things have changed a lot since I was a student, although in many ways they haven't changed. We used to have our meetings in the AMP auditorium, where we'd get a cup of tea, and the big discussion was whether we'd get plain biscuits or cream biscuits. And the Institute office was in Alan Wiley's garage at St Ives. It didn't really have any full-time staff. I think Alan was a volunteer. He was retired then. I actually was chief examiner for 2B in 1983 and 84. Assistant in 81 and 82. Who here has failed an actuarial exam? Raise your hand. Well, you're probably smarter than me, because I sat 8 final exams and passed 4, 2 of which were my final 2. In 1977, I had to pass 1 exam, which I failed, and then I got 2 exams to do. I got dental insurance as well, and then I thought, well, if I don't get through one of these, I'm going to give it up. But I got through 2. General insurance I passed very first time, the only subject I think I know nothing about. and then I went on to become assistant examiner chief examiner. So the difference between passing and failing sometimes it is quite small. And whilst you get depressed with continual failure, you've probably been reasonably close. I have advised the Institute in the past that all people who pass their final exam should be given their exam paper back, so they can reread it and remember how humbling an experience it is. Because exams are very low standard of answers, as it would be. If someone said to you at work, look, you've got to bring peace in our time to the Western world and peace in our time to the Middle East. You've got 3 hours to do it, and you've got to give 2 perfect answers. Well, of course, you were just born in a heap and you couldn't do it. So it's a very unrealistic environment, and we have to make allowance for that when we assess. So we're really just looking for a bright light somewhere, a scary that you perhaps know what you're talking about, and that when you've got plenty of time, you can give an answer that's a credit to the profession. So I'm just going to talk a bit about the pass mark, which really has not changed in 30 years, more or less. Talk about the participation mark, the multiple choice questions, and the long answer. My advice to students is always read the question twice, answer the question once. So you read the question twice, you answer the question once. And please, answer the question that you read, okay? Seems simple advice, but you'd be surprised how many times it is ignored. For example, in the 2B exam this year, we said, calculate the policy liability and give the earnings. 3 students just did the liability, perfectly correct, did not do the earnings. So that's a very, very simple, basic mistake. This is what a pass list looks like. This is the actual pass list from last semester. And it's always amazing how the marks just sort of fall out. Into little bunches. There's a group that can clearly pass. There's another group that have tried pretty hard and probably deserves to pass. And then you get a small group of marginals. This year we didn't have too many, but often you have about 10 or 15% a marginal, and then you fall away very, very quickly. But the thing to notice is we take marks and we add them up. And then we rank the students. So it's really all about Mark. So this is the old presentation. I updated my presentation. It's all about Mark. And as Philip says, we have a scaling system, a scaled pass mark. But as an examiner, I like to look a lot at raw passes. And raw pass marks have been about 112 to 115, 116. And it was that 30 years ago. Nothing much has really changed. Students can fail. Last year a student failed because they had low participation. This student here, 112.7 marks. He got 14 for participation. So he probably did 2 posts and 4 replies. He did the bare minimum, got 7 out of 10. I thought he was doing great. Everybody should get 18 or 20. So this is out of 20 because the marks are out of 200. So 10 is multiplied by 2. If he'd got another 6 marks, he'd be on 118.7. Gee, it'd be hard for me to fail him, wouldn't it? So, and he actually did one good question. No, he did 2 good questions. He just was just below everything, and if he'd done well in all she, I don't know if it was male or female, I do know what country it was from. enough, only because when I changed the pass criteria, I could see how the by country changed. then, more than likely, they had a good chance of passing. Students have to be fit to practice for me to pass them, and they have to have no major misunderstandings. I mean, that's what Philip says, but in actual fact, it's really Mark that determines. all the other stuff the Board of Examiners tries to put on me to find more students to pass, well, this time passing 11 out of 42, I didn't have to find more students to fail. Sorry. I really think I'm always trying to find students to pass. It's always been that way. Last time, before we passed 40 centre students, this time it's 25. But you won't pass if you don't get enough marks. So pick up those marks when they're there. When it says give me liability and earnings, give me both. So read the question, do what it does. When it does a participation mark, don't think, oh, I'll just do the minimum requirements. Go through and exceed the minimum requirements. It's all about marks. And marks are all about comments. Something where I can put a tick. So, you've got to do 2 posts and 4 replies. What happens if you do 4 posts and 8 replies? What happens? Anybody think what happens?
Don't get 4 marks.
Probably. Why do we get 4 marks? Because there's a requirement for at least 2, 3, 3, 2. 2 to meet the minimum, which I think you should get 0 for. 3 for your communication, and 3 for your critical thinking, raising issues. And 2 for helping other students. So if you do more than you need, straight away you're getting to those 2 for helping other students. Doesn't matter how bad your post is, you're going to get at least 1. 1 out of 10 or 2 out of 20. If it's got 2 good ones, 3 good ones, you're going to get 2. Okay? Now, because you've done more posts than you require, let's say you were sometimes good, but you had 6 really excellent posts for communication, and 6 really excellent posts for critical analysis, and the other ones were garbage. Okay? We're just going to mark your best 6. Okay? So the more you exceed the minimum, the more garbage we can disregard. Okay? So you're going to probably get 2 marks for helping other students, and you're probably going to pick up 1 more mark elsewhere. That's 3 marks, that's 6 marks. And for a lot of you, 6 marks is the difference between pass and fail. I don't understand is not a post. That really annoys me. That sort of, I don't understand analysis of surplus. I don't understand, I don't understand general insurance. That doesn't get me any marks. But That is not a post, and that belongs in the subject form. But in a post, you've got to describe what the issue is. I don't understand how analysis of surface is useful because it's so dependent on the valuation basis, and management has nothing to do with the valuation basis. Reply. So there's a sort of critical analysis. Reply. But the valuation basis does feed back into the pricing basis, and management understands prices. So you can always talk about it in terms of pricing, and you should also design your analysis of surface to reflect the needs of the users. Wow, that's a great point.
Okay.
So straight away, I've probably got one, two or three participation marks. So how long is it going to take me to get 20? So 10 out of 10 or 20 out of 20? 2 hours,
okay,
maximum. And the more, there's a reasonable correlation between participation and passing. But certainly the best students get high correlation, participation marks. And when I see someone who gets 5 out of 10, which is 10 out of 20, I think I ain't gonna look too hard to pass this person because they're not really interested in the course. Multiple choice questions. Well, we were worried about this. We thought, give them 40 questions, these are bright people, they're probably going to get 80-90%. We were terrified of what would happen. Then we tested the questions, and the testers were lucky to get 50%. And then we thought, ooh, so we cut out the really nasty questions, most of which were mine, and then we limited it down to about 29 or 30 questions, 80 marks. So it's been a lot harder than we expected. The marks are a lot more bunched. The pass mark is around about 60%. The pass mark, not necessarily the pass rate. We don't scale the marks, which is means if it's a tough exam, then your marks will fall. I'm not quite sure what it means on scaling, but I try to get I'll probably adjust the scaling marks somewhere because I really look at raw marks. I've tried to tell the Institute this, but they never listen to me. Raw marks is what we always have used, and they are raw marks. The purpose of scaling is so the education people can compare between subjects and over years. But I want to know who deserves to pass and who deserves to fail, and I need draw marks for that. It's very important to have good language skills for MCQ, the multiple choice questions, because we are told to give you answers that are credible but wrong. Okay? So we go for those common misconceptions, we use those. We use things that would seem believable if you hadn't read the course, and then there's a correct answer. So you've got to identify the correct answer, but just as importantly, identify the incorrect answer. So there's two steps to it. This answer looks right, but this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. There's always a reason why the wrong answer is wrong. And as Philip said, the radio buttons can tell you if there's one right answer or more than one. And yes, people do click one answer when there's supposed to be two. We even had a question last exam where it was a multiple. There were two answers required, so it had the square buttons. And one of the options was none of the above. So that could never apply. That was clicked a couple of times. So perhaps they were just going through and guessing. Or perhaps they were a little bit nervous. But MCQs are usually based on learning objectives. Okay. So you know those learning objectives you get in your course at the front? The stuff you don't bother reading? When I'm going through the questions, I've got to get a spread across the learning objectives. So I'm going to go to each learning objective and then derive a question to fit into that. So you should know what those learning objectives mean. And once you understand those, then you'll be better prepared for the multiple choice questions. Now, the long answer questions. Now this is really easy, because you get two questions in 3 hours. And really, they're questions that should take you 2 hours to do, 1 hour each to read and to answer. The other hour is there to maybe mess up your spreadsheet a bit and start again. So there's no time. So, but you should be planning on answering that exam in 2 hours. Because that gives you time to make mistakes and not panic. It gives you time to go back and check your work. And often we're asking you to put your answers into a Word document to copy and paste your calculations. Okay? So I want to see in the calculations that 2 plus 5 is 7. I don't want to see that the answer is 7. Because your documentation should be good enough for another actuarial student to follow what you've done. And if you just give a numeric answer in your Word document and all the calculations are in your spreadsheet, you're not going to get any marks for it. Okay? And the reason we do this is that spreadsheets are so messy for people. Okay? I'm not going to bother going through different people's spreadsheets because you might have the right working on the 4th spreadsheet up in column A8 or something. But I'm not going to bother reading that way because I'm just going to try and minimise the amount of time I have to read your answer. Okay? But still, read that question twice. And we're asking these case study sort of questions so you can identify key issues. Okay, so who's here from life insurance? And who's here from general insurance? You've got a similar issue. You do sorts of earnings statements in general insurance. And you, well, in life insurance we have source of earnings and distribution of earnings. And one key issue, and we had a participant question on this in the last exam, is that the source of earnings and the distribution of earnings should match each other. So if I earn a dollar profit, I can distribute a dollar profit. In the question we have, we earned $1, $2, $3, $4, $5 profit, then $5, $5, $5. But we distributed $2, $2, $2, $2, $2, $2. Nobody picked that up. That was a critical issue. So nobody really understood participating business. Nobody really thought about why have the examiners gone to tell me that we have a level bonus each year and that our source of profit comes from interest surplus. I also put in a lot of numbers in there. Now, a lot of people seem to think I like putting numbers in a question. Now, I've spent 20 hours on a spreadsheet to get this right and I put all these numbers in. How many students do you think used any of those numbers? More than half? More than 40%? More than 20%? It was probably about 20%. Okay? And they're marks that are there easy for you to pick up. Okay? And all you have to do is spend 10 minutes reading the question and underlining the questions. Those students who calculated the liability, not the earnings, and one guy got almost perfect marks on liability, didn't calculate the earnings, they lose easy, easy marks. So make sure you use all of the data. Make sure when the question says calculate A and B, you calculate A and B. Make sure when the question has A, B, C, D, that you do A, B, C, D. Lots of questions. Students don't do D. Sorry, lots of failing students don't do D. If you miss out a part of a question, it's very hard to get those marks that you need to pass. Okay. You've got time to work out how to do a spreadsheet. Take in some standard spreadsheets to do pricing, to do reserve calculation. A really good rule is add positive numbers and subtract negative numbers. You get no marks for repeating the numbers in the question. So if you tell me the assets are 100 and the liabilities are 80, you get no mark if that's in the question. But if you say the surplus or the excess assets are 20, you say 100 minus 80, bang, you get a mark. Okay, so use those numbers in the questions. Okay. Really annoys me to see students who think, look, I'll repeat the whole question all the way down, I'll give you all the details and he's going to give me lots of marks. I know the question, I wrote the question. Okay. You're not going to fool me. And particularly now, it's all typewritten. Because students used to think, oh, I've mentioned a point on the first page, and I'll repeat the same point midway down the second page, and I'll repeat the same point midway down the third page, and I'll get 3 marks for it. That doesn't work either. And remember, all you guys are pretty smart. So any trick you try in an exam to fool the examiner is probably going to be tried by another 30 students in the exam. So if we miss it with you, we'll pick it up sooner or later, and then we'll be familiar and we'll go back and remark your exam. Common false, not providing all the requirements, repeating the question, working from the spreadsheet, too much waffle, particularly now you're typing. Keep it short, keep it concise, keep it relevant, and make sure you answer the question. Answer the questions. Second last, a lot of students have the attitude that say, I'm a very smart person, and I want you to know I'm a very smart person, so I will tell you everything I know about this subject. I don't want you to tell me everything you know, I want you to tell me what's relevant to the question. Okay? The other tragic case is I'm so smart, I'm not going to state the bleeding obvious. I'm not going to tell you that 100 minus 8 is 20. I can do arithmetic, you can do arithmetic. Let me talk about some minor obscure point in the standard that you've forgotten about. Now, I'm no smarter than you, I probably don't know the course as well as you. So I'm not going to know those finer details. I'm just going to be after the big points. And I'm really setting my questions from the point of view of a student who has no experience in the subject, but who has read the course and who has thought about the course. Okay, so I'm not really going to be asking questions about minor points. And what a delight it is to read a good question. As a chief examiner, you often are reading all the borderline cases, but every now and then it's good for the soul to go back and read it. They do happen. There's some great answers. People know how to do the calculations and get them correct. We had some guy who added the assets and the liabilities together. So 300 minus 290, he had 590 as the total and didn't realise. That's just nerves and carelessness, and we all do stupid things like that. A little bit of time checking your answer will show you that. Address all the data, answer the question asked. And we also often your questions are asking to give a recommendation. And that's pretty well uniform for the long answers now. Here's a problem, analyse a problem, and give a recommendation. So, if you need to put up the price, you don't say, my recommendation would be either to put up the price or leave it the same or to lower it to match the competition. Now, that's not a comment that's going to get you marks. My recommendation would be to put up the price, recognising that we might get lower volumes, but, writing business at a loss is just going to end up in one place. That's a relevant thing. Yes, you can qualify it all the other way and say, but these short-term marginal pricing, blah, 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 blah. But at least state the bleeding obvious first and then analyse it. Because we're looking for people who are fit to practice. Okay? We're not looking for people who know how to weasel their way around standards. We're looking for people who are going to actually be a credit to the profession. And when it comes to standards and the legislation, surprise, surprise, that sets the minimum standard, not the maximum standard. Okay? So you can have a liability that's higher than the minimum if it's for solvency purposes. Profit's a little bit more controlled, but still for internal purposes you might want to have reserves that are appropriate rather than legal. Okay? There might be higher reserves. Be aware of your audience and use appropriate language. Question I had last year, I said the audience was the board who was sick and tired of actuarial mumbo jumbo. Okay? And you were giving a briefing note to the actuary. Some students in the briefing note said, we may or may not reduce the bonus. It depends on what the analysis is going to be. Okay.
reasonable statement, but you're sitting to the board, so you're a board member, and I say to you, we may or may not reduce the bonus, depends what the analysis is going to be. We have to make a decision. What are you going to say?
What does that mean?
And I'm going to say, I thought that was quite obvious. And then I'm going to lose my job. Okay? And because I had a bad briefing paper. Yeah, it means nothing. So you can't give any ticks to that part. But if I say cut the bonus by 40%, what are you going to do as a board member? Maybe, or you might think that's high or might think it's low, but it's going to mean something to you. So at least there's what a specific recommendation means. And have a structure in your answer. Okay? Have a start, have a middle, have an end. Okay? Just do a little bit of planning, give it a bit of structure, and that will stand out your question from all the others. Probably gone on for longer than I intended, but just to go over what we talked about, the pass mark, make sure you get enough marks. Don't leave marks in the exam, don't leave marks in the presentation. For most of you, you'll be within 5 or 10 marks of passing. You've made it easy. Hopefully some of you will be over the pass mark. You should get 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 for participation. Anything less is not adequate. MCQ, identify the wrong answers as well as the right answers. And long answers, read the question twice, answer the question once. Thank you.
It's got my name on it. Hello everyone, my name is Jen. I'm glad to be here and glad to see all of you here. I'm actually a bit nervous to speak in front of so many bright and smart people, so if throughout the presentation you find me trying to hold eye contact, just do the same, please. You don't need to wave to me. Today I'd like to share with you three things. I totally agree with Philip, the new assessment structure is a better tool to help us learn. I would like to share a handful of practical tips to help you when you're doing the online participation, the multiple choice questions or the case study questions. And in the end, I'll just talk briefly what I see the connection for the new structure with our professional and personal development. So firstly, I think the new structure is a better tool because it will help us to learn by sharing our experience, asking a question, explaining something to another person or people, and critically evaluate our peers' perspective. And the multiple choice questions, as Philip and Steve both talked about, will assess both the knowledge and the judgment. You will break complex issues into smaller chunks. So instead of having a question going on for 2 pages, you have 4 or 5 lines, and then that will help you to understand one particular issue at a time. It's easier for time management in the exam room. So when you're given 6 questions, each going on for 2 pages, you're quite easily lost track of time. But when you're given 30 multiple choice questions within an hour, you probably have a good chance to manage your time effectively. And the last point I would like to say is not only practicing answering the multiple choice questions you found, also try to write a few so that when you try to think what to ask, you probably go one step deeper to think about the real knowledge you've got to learn or the skills you have to have. And as always, we have the long answer questions or case studies. So we'd be given 3 hours to do 2 questions. You need to communicate effectively and clearly. And now, personally, I think Word and Excel is much better than writing for 3 hours. So now I would like to talk about some practical tips. The first one will be actively engaging in the forums. I'm sure all of you will spend some time doing Facebook or Twitter, just to write a thoughtful blog or Photoshop a picture. But now maybe you can allocate some of those time on the e-learning platform and try to ask a question in reinsurance, for example, or response to your peer. Or maybe try to disagree with someone and then say why. But the point is allocate time. It's not a tick box exercise. And as Steve stressed so many times, you get marks for it. So it's just a bit more incentive for you to do it. Another tip will be ask questions. No question is stupid. No question is a bad question. So as soon as I knew I'm giving the presentation, I went on Google and say how to keep eye contact in presentation. So as soon as you type your question, you will see, you'll be surprised how many people already asked it, and then you will normally find a very good solution to it. This is a little joke my colleague sent me before. So the point here is we all work in different areas of expertise, and then we may assume everyone knows what we're talking about, but sometimes they don't. So be generous, share your experience, give some real-world examples, and that will be really helpful to your peers. I'd like to talk a bit more on type of multiple choice questions you may have. So you may ask you something as a matter of fact, or it may ask you some judgment. For example, the first question is asking the RBA cash rate, which is just a fact. And then the second one is more asking you to make a judgment based on some facts. I actually don't know the answer. I'll make that up.
But we wouldn't do a D.
Yeah, no.
We don't do these.
And then as we don't know everything, so when we're given the choices, we can make an educated guess. So if I just say write the Chinese character for dog, probably you won't have a clue. But if you say which of the following is not the animal in Chinese, probably you have a reasonable chance to pick that up. Yes.
Right.
So this is to say in multiple choice questions there are codes that you can rate. That's a, by the way, for those who didn't get it, that's the little thing on the left. That's animal. Very important skill before was can you write fast enough for 3 hours? That's all. But now, are you good at typing? I'm sure majority of you will be good at typing from either work, study, or social networking. But if you are among those who type with two fingers, probably it's time to start practicing. And what about Excel? How many of those functions you can recognize? But my point here is not to say you have to build a very complicated model. That's actually won't help at all. You need to bring some templates, and I'm sure the instructor for each course will say what kind of templates you need. But then make sure you have some high level reasonableness check up front so you know your model is working. And then Excel will save you time to punch the buttons on your calculator so you can focus more on the judgment side, focus on sensitivities or what-if scenarios, that's asking the question. Another thing I would like to share with you is to write meaningful headings for your responses. So if you compare the two on the left, it's quite standard headings. You will say recent change, and then you explain what the changes are. You say impact. And then you'll say further actions. But the headings themselves won't give much information. If you look at the right-hand side, you will actually say what the changes are, and then what that implies, and then what action you got to take. So when you don't have a lot of time in the exam room, you can use the headings to say your points, and then when you do have time, you can elaborate a bit more below it. This is when you focus on what you're gonna do, you focus on more what you can control, not what you try to achieve. And from Steve's slides you just saw, probably the probability of passing is probably lower than failing. So when you're setting your study goals, you'll say, I will allocate 20 hours a week to study, or I will read chapter 3 by the end of July. But you don't say, I will pass the exam for sure. And then by focusing on more what you can control, in the end you will feel you achieve something regardless if you pass or not. This is just my running schedule. So I said I'm going to run 80 kilometers by the end of July or August, but my weight loss probably won't be in line with that. And inactive means a weight gain, actually. But if I focus on what I'm going to do, I will feel better in the end. So a quick recap on the tips. Engage in the discussion and you will get marks. Ask questions. Relate to examples you have in your work life. Make educated guesses in the multiple choice questions. Practice on typing skills and Excel. Use meaningful headings in your report. Focus on what you can control. And then at least once before the exam, I suggest everyone lock yourself up in a room and do a mock exam and the exam conditions. That's just to warm yourself up. Sometimes it's not really how much you know, it's that you're just not familiar with that environment and you can't manage to get out of what you know. And lastly, I'd like to talk a bit more on how I see the new structure connects to the professional or personal development of ourselves. So at the bottom is the technical background. We all get more university studies and maybe part two control cycles. And then we start to work. We apply the fancy distributions in the real world. And we work a bit longer. We relate that to the business environment we're working in. And we start to critically think about others' perspective. We start to make professional judgments. But at the top is actually to communicate effectively what we think, what we know, and influence people. So there's no point to have all that fantastic thoughts in your head and no one else know what you're thinking about. And I think the new assessment structure fit nicely to develop all these skills for us. Thank you.
Alright, so let's set aside, say, 10 minutes for Q&A. I think I'll just jump in at once. Kevin Chang, IAG.
Thanks, Harry. I just want to ask, do we have to know how to write VBA in terms of Excel skills?
I don't think you need to write VBA. I don't think you need to write a VBA.
I think those functions that Django gave were pretty good. And you should have standard templates.
Yeah, the approach we're taking is we realize that there's limited time. The emphasis is not on people having complicated Excel skills. So that's not what it's all about. So we realize that within the limited time, we don't want to be doing that.
Make sure you know what's positive and what's negative. it sounds silly, but a lot of actuaries have positive, and then have a complicated formula, which is a great way to make a mistake. And you saw that last event.
Thanks to the speakers for your presentation. Found it really useful. My questions. With regards to multiple choice and how that will be marked. Also on the ones that are checkboxes, so ones with multiple solutions. So if, say, there are two correct answers out of four, and you select two, one incorrect and one correct, how is that marked?
It's a very good question. Steve's got his hand up.
Yep.
I know the answer, but I'll...
Zero. So you must, if there are two correct answers, you must get those two correct. And that's why those questions are probably worth 3 marks, sometimes 4 marks. And that's why language is very important.
Still on the multiple choice, if you say the emphasis is on speed, why then do you deny the, like, deny the use of Excel in the multiple choice and force us to bring a calculator?
I think it's because it's a closed book exam and we don't want to have the problems of other stuff being brought into the exam. And there's nothing that you should need to have Excel for. I mean, that's good for you. It means we can't put something with a complicated formula in there.
Just a question, again, everyone's talking about multiple choice. I just wanted to know, will there be a strong emphasis on like memorization type questions within the closed book format?
No. So you wouldn't get the first question, what is the RBA cash rate? But, I mean, you do need to know your work pretty well, but it's not going to be what is the RBA cash rate. It's going to be more like the second question. Sometimes a little bit of what standards to apply here might be there. I suppose that's a tip like that. But I would still think you should know your work pretty well. You should assume it's going to be like a memory exam, but it's not. It's going to ask you a question which tests your understanding of what something is, and just as importantly, what it is not.
For the online discussion, can you respond to your own post? As in, like, if someone responds to someone else's response to your own post, would that
Yes, that's exactly what you should do. If someone responds to your post, you should respond to their response. Responding to your own post, I don't think we've seen anybody do that. We do see a lot of posts that are very suspicious, you know, where you do a post and the person next to you says, oh, buddy, you should ask that, and then gives a perfect answer. Within 10 minutes of you posting online. But we give you the benefit of the doubt because you are very smart people.
Hello. For the long answer questions, is that different to CAP, or are you guys trying to make it more similar to CAP?
I'll hand over to Steve after I finish on this one. We did actually look at the CAP course as one of the ideas for coming up with them. However, the similarities are really just in the medium. The fact that you've got Word and Excel, no access to the internet, and it's a case study. Now, the CAP course is very different to these questions in a lot of other respects. Firstly, CAP course you get 8 hours to write a question. So we're not asking anything as complicated as something like a CAP question, which requires that much time. The CAP course has also got an emphasis on writing reports for non-actuarial audiences. Now, the longer answer questions here are much smaller things. So there are some significant differences. And the CAP course also has a very strong focus on communication, which isn't the case with these questions. Steve, have you got anything more you want to...
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes and the long answer is no. Basically, and a good example is this year we had a question in one of the exams, and when we reviewed it, we said, this is not appropriate for this exam, and because it was more a CAP question, because as Philip said, it had a lot more analysis in it than what we wanted, and it was more about writing reports and understanding issues. So it will be a case study, but it won't have the complications of CAP, because you don't have the time, but we do want you to understand the issues, and there's probably 2 or 3 key fundamental issues in each question.
After the introduction of the computer exams for the life insurance subjects, have you noticed any changes in the pass rate between the two types of exams? Or like just general student performances?
If you look at it numerically, yes, the overall pass rates for the last two semesters are much higher than the previous two semesters. But, and that is, I think the aim is to have a higher pass rate. It is much easier to mark. So I think students can get their points across better because you're reading something that's typewritten rather than poor handwriting. So from the student point of view, that's true. But students still make stupid comments. Students still don't read the questions. Students still don't answer the questions. So at the moment, I suppose the jury is still out because the students haven't yet really grasped the opportunity that's there. I mean, as I said, it's a 2-hour exam with 1 hour for you to check your work and to perhaps make a mistake and not panic. You should not treat it as a 3-hour exam. You should treat it as a 2-hour exam.
I've got time for one more. Just coming back to the long answer questions, I'm just wondering if it's not similar to CAP, does it mean it's effectively the same as the past exams, except that the media has changed from handwriting to long answer questions? If so, does it mean the past paper is still relevant for revision purpose?
When compared to the past exams, you won't have, give me some facts, because that's in the multiple choice questions. Past exams had 4 or 5 questions in 3 hours, so pretty much there wasn't do some calculations that are more than additional subtractions. So now the new questions will have do some calculations, and they often will have multiply and divide. So they're going to be more sort of complicated questions. So it is, but the past questions will be useful as a guide, but don't, basically the past A and B, the give you some simple facts stuff, is not what you should be concentrating on. It's the C and D, and you should be looking for questions that present problems and require analysis and give a recommendation. So if you see a question that says give a recommendation or give with reasons your recommendations, that's the sort of question you should be doing. But also, the past questions and the answers have probably better course material than is in the course. That is where the really rich course material is, because they're from practical situations and they're sort of very, very focused. So you should always do the last 4 exams and then read the questions, because they read the answers. The answers mean a lot more to you once you've done the question, and that is fantastic course material.
Just further to that, when we did this session for GAP in Melbourne, we had a student who'd passed under the old system and the new system, and he also mentioned that he thought assignments were very similar to the new longest style case study at GAP. So he was recommending that past assignments are quite useful.
And assignments have good templates in them for calculation.
All right, guys, please join me in thanking our speakers for their time.